ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Monday. Corbin and Ben in the house. It's a big week for us, Ben.
Why is that?
Well, the regular season's over. It's finals time. The wild card's around the corner. Round 25, as Ed Richards calls it. But we're excited for another reason, because right on the precipice of the final series beginning, we've got our live show on Thursday night.
And I'm hearing whispers that there might be another one coming up around grand final week. So just keep your ears peeled. There was talks of sort of small stadium shows, given the... Small arena shows.
Gotcha.
Given the demand for the first live show coming up this Thursday. But looking forward to that. Can't wait for it.
And if you can't be there, you're listening somewhere else, or you didn't get a ticket or whatever it turns out to be, it will be available here in the podcast feed through ABC AFL Daily. So you'll be able to listen along come Thursday. All right, let's get into AFL Monday. Of course, Mark Murphy always in the house with us as we pull apart all the hot button issues from round 24 of the AFL Premiership season.
You sock it at Ford, inside attacking 50. Evans was clean. Hand pass to Cripps, who gets the 48. Around the corner from Cripps, all the way home!
Look, we've worked really closely with the club over the past week. Met with the club board only a couple of weeks ago. It's a learning experience for the club, and I think it's something that they'll continue to work through.
So Morrison goes to the left foot kick, inside 50, Watson! The Wizard flies! In the rain, in the wet, no problem!
Although I've loved my time in Adelaide and everything the city's given to me and the football club's given to me, I feel like I'm probably at a stage of my life where I'd like to get back around some family and friends and enjoy some more time with them.
On 774 ABC Melbourne,
ABC Sport Digital,
and ABC Listen,
this is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben.
And the regular season is done. It is finals time. It is wildcard time in the AFL season. This is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben. We are back in Melbourne and ready to go for the biggest month of all. Or spring is just around the corner. The Bombers have announced their new senior coach that leads the program today. Your calls on 1300 222 774. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron has travelled back from up in Mackay, where we were together for the second test. Here we are in Melbourne, Ben, ready to go for finals time. Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, Corbin. And I just want people to know out there tonight that somewhere here in Melbourne, Ricky Ponting is sitting at home icing his ears. After he copped an absolute ear bashing on the flight from Brisbane to Melbourne today. We walked down the aisle of the plane and Corbin sort of turned into his. And who steps up? Ricky Ponting. Corbin sitting in the middle seat next to Ricky.
He was pretty unlucky, Ricky, it must be said.
Shortest of short straws, and just had to listen to Corbin for the whole flight.
That's not right. I was on my best behaviour. I thought I'm not gonna try and speak to him. Only speak when spoken to. I thought I don't want to enough Ricky Ponting out the 2.5 hours on the way home. But he was. I think his headphones might have been flat, which meant he was flatter than men, you can imagine. So he was a sitting duck. And in the end, we had a good old chat. We spoke about 70% footy, I think it's fair to say, 30% cricket, but childhood idol of mine. So what a thrill it was. This man was the childhood idol of many. He's a 300 gamer from the Carlton Football Club, the former Carlton captain, the man who the coaches voted the premier player in the game back in 2011. Mark Murphy is in the house. Hello, Murph.
Good evening. Who initiated conversation anyway? I'm interested to know.
It was
he's not going to say Ricky.
Did he go a bit red when you say, "Oh, punter's there"? Hang on.
I see him in the media center, so but it's usually just walk past the obligatory sort of head nod. But poor Ricky, he would have everyone chat to him about cricket. So I thought, you know what? If we're going to have some conversation, let's try and talk about something else. And he's an enormous footy fan. Loves the Kangaroos. I haven't played golf with him or anything like that, unlike other members of this panel.
All he wanted to speak about that day was North Melbourne and how they were tracking. But do you know what is funny? You said a man who was a childhood idol of so many.
Yes.
Including Nick Dacos, the best player in the game at the moment. So, like, if Nick Dacos walks down the aisle of a plane and sees Mark Murphy, does he get through to sit next to our man Murph?
Maybe. Not anymore. I wouldn't have thought.
Here we go. The Essendon Football Club only moments ago put a statement out saying McVay appointed as AFL senior coach. The Bombers confirmed standout candidate after extensive deliberate process. So it goes on to say, the Essendon Football Club has today appointed Mark McVay as its AFL senior coach. The 232-game Essendon champion returns to the hangar after nearly 14 years away from the club and more than a decade of elite-level coaching experience, taking on the top job following an extensive and deliberate search process that considered the best coaching candidates from across the competition, played 14 seasons for the Bombers, since retiring, built a coaching career with as an assistant at GWS, where he also served as the interim coach, and then, of course, in more recent times with the Sydney Swans. So he beats out the other candidates here, including James Hurd. Now, Murray Davis and Jamie Graham also ran deep in this process, but Mark McVay is the new coach of the Essendon Bombers. Are you an Essendon fan? How do you feel about it? 1-300-222-774. Mark McVay, the new coach of the Bombers.
I'll give you some flowers here, Corbin. Someone texted in while we were doing the cricket, Murph, and said, I thought Corbin and Ben might be mortal enemies the way that they bicker on AFL Monday. But Corbin's had inside word on this process right through the start. He revealed when Murray Davis was a part of the process, a name that a lot of people didn't know about, and then he got through to the Final Four, which Corbin just mentioned there. But also on the 25th of July, Corbin said this about the Essendon coaching process long before any other newsbreakers said it.
I still feel like, as it sits here at the moment, though, that Mark McVay is probably the name that looms large in this particular conversation. So he's an Essendon person, yes. He's got great IP, having been up there in Sydney in successful programs for both the Swans and the Giants. I wouldn't be surprised if there's somehow a way that the Essendon people are involved. I still just don't think that is with James Hurd as the figurehead.
So there we have it. So our man Corby on this very program and on ABC AFL Daily was ahead of everyone with the news around it. Is it the right choice, Murph?
Well, time will tell. I think what Essendon fans all need to do, I think there's a lot of emotion out there from what I'm hearing, and Essendon supporters almost split about the way in which it's transpired and the fact that their favourite son is not going to coach. But I think that all Essendon supporters need to get behind their new senior coach in Mark McVay and support that football club.
You seem to have inside word at the Essendon Football Club, Corbin. You're also an Essendon person. How does it...
Whatever that means.
How does it land with you?
It feels like a bit of a compromise to me, and that's no disrespect to Mark McVay, but he's not the highest credentialed assistant coach in terms of, you know, every other job process that comes up. It's the same kind of names. It's Jamie Graham, it's Corey Enright, it's James Kelly, so on and so forth. Mark McVay is not a name in any of those processes. And then he's also not the Essendon Messiah. So he feels like he's a little bit of column A, he's a little bit of column B. And in the end, they've settled on him. I also feel for Dean Solomon tonight, where I feel like he was clearly earmarked by Andrew Welsh's board to be the next senior coach of Essendon. Mm. And then in the end, he sort of lived the Brad Scott experience in this little microcosm of 10, 12 weeks, whatever he spent in charge as the caretaker coach. And then he was held to the same standard Brad Scott was, which was there's not enough wins. And I'm probably looking at Andrew Welsh tonight thinking, what does this board think of this group? Do they actually think they're capable of more than what they are? Like at Carlton, it was the complete opposite. They thought the group was capable of more. They moved on the coach. They clearly were. All of a sudden, they're a wild card team. They've lost two games since Josh Fraser took over. Essendon thought they were capable of more. They moved on the coach. They're not. They're as bad as an Essendon team's been really in 100 years almost. So I would, if I was Mark McVay, I'd be very careful at what the expectation is, you know, when he takes over. If Mark McVay thinks, or the board thinks, that all of a sudden he's going to come in and they're going to start winning games, I just don't see it. Mm. I think they need someone that's ready to go down the development path for a period of time. And if I was Mark McVay, I wouldn't sort of be too sure that I'm going to be given that time. That the way that Andrew Welsh has assessed his coaches in recent times, to me, it feels like he's going to grade them on wins and losses. So that's a tough bar to try and meet for Mark McVay in the short term. Matt is the first of our callers tonight on 1-300-222-774. We've got lines available. Corbin and Ben with Mark Murphy in the house. This is 774 ABC Melbourne, and this is AFL Monday. Hello, Matt. Appreciate your call.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. So 2 points that I'd like as an Essendon supporter of 50 years. The first, somebody said to me today that Spike McVay was actually the best man at Andrew Welsh's wedding. I can't verify that, but maybe that explains why he was picked over others. But more importantly, we've been hearing all along that Essendon have a process for selecting a coach. We're going to stick to that process. They've had that process in place, and five coaches since Sheeds have been sacked and failed. Why is that process going to work now when it hasn't before?
It's a great question.
Mm.
It's a great question, and it's... Yep, I'm happy to leave that as common, as an open question.
There's no reason to believe that anything will be different.
Well, certainly not if they think they're going to be winning games.
Wouldn't that have been said if James Hurd had won the job as well? So, like, what's the call? Like, I mean, Mark McVay's been in a different football club for a long period of time. Been at the Sydney Swans under a regime which has been very good for a long period of time. So, I mean, what do you want them to do?
Mm. Well, I guess the point would be what Corbyn said. If you agree with what Corbyn said, that McVay is a compromise as the Essendon person, but not necessarily the highest credentialed assistant coach out there, go and get the best. Go the long way around the mountain, do the work, yep, and get to the point where you develop the kids, and it takes a period of time. Don't be impatient.
Well, in a way, the fact that James Hurd's been in the running has compromised the process, yep, from what you're saying and from what everyone's saying. But when you talk about the best list of assistant coaches out there that may or may not have got the role, you look back to Collingwood when Craig McRae was appointed, everyone thought, oh, gee, that one's out of the box, isn't it? No one expected that one.
Yeah.
Josh Fraser, like, obviously we've seen the body of work that he's been able to implement there at Carlton, and they've been incredible. But, you know, 12 months ago, we would have laughed if you had said Josh Fraser was going to be the next Carlton coach. So it can turn very quickly, and you've got to back in the people that choose the next coach and give that time to transpire. But
it's a good point, because on the outside, if you'd said to me which of the four candidates do you want, I probably would have had McVay third on my list. But I don't get to hear all the presentations, so it's easy to sort of pick up from the outside. But they're the guys that get to listen on the way through. 1-300-222-774 is the talkback number. That's 1-300-222-774. A couple of SMSs. One here from Peter in Balaclava says, "Any chance James Hurd would be an assistant?" Well, Mark Murphy did work on the same staff as James Hurd at Port Melbourne last year. I'll ask him in just a moment, but this was James Hurd last night, courtesy of the Nine Network on the Footy Furnace, what he had to say about missing out on the top job.
Oh, well, firstly, congratulations to Mark. You know, a great friend of mine, and very proud of him that he's going to be named the coach. And, so good on him. From a personal point of view, though, it's very disappointing. You know, I'm disappointed, put my heart and soul into the effort, but obviously fell short, and that's the way it goes.
No doubt your phone will be running hot. Have you received a call from Essendon to say thanks but no thanks?
Not yet. No, not as yet, but maybe that's coming.
Has there been a discussion about another role apart from being senior coach?
No, not with me. So I think, it's time to move on to other things. But as I said, congratulations to Mark. He's been a coach for about 15 years now after leaving as a player at Essendon Football Club, been to the Giants, been to Essendon, and done a lot of work and development. So, yeah, good on him.
You just mentioned move on to other things. Is it still a passion to coach?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, we're down at Port Melbourne at the moment, and we've got a final series to play. We'll see what plays out at the end of the year with some other clubs that have been contacted me, and see what happens.
One last one. Yes. You mentioned other clubs, so still an interest to coach at AFL level?
Well, I've been knocked back. I've failed twice.
I failed twice.
Let's see what happens. But, as I said, we've got a final series to play out with Port Melbourne. Hopefully we can go all the way in the VFL, and then we'll see what happens after that.
The board wasn't all that different when he missed out the last time, when Brad Scott got the job. There hasn't been so much turnover. He wasn't asked there about whether he would accept another role inside the Essendon Football Club as part of McVay's staff. You know him relatively well, Murph. Do you reckon that's something that would appeal to him?
It's a hard one, because to go for a role and miss out, and then to be, even if they were to offer him a role that sits below that, it would be a hard one to swallow for anyone who's of that ilk who wants to be a senior coach. The one thing that sort of struck me a little bit is that when you've got a Final Four that going for a coaching role, that you'd think the club would reach out and actually give them a call and say, "Hey, this is the story. We haven't announced. We're not going to announce you as coach, and these are the reasons as to why," so that they can grow and get better. Especially when you're a former favourite son.
Well, John from Coburg has texted saying that it is understood that only McVay was contacted by the board. None of the unsuccessful candidates were contacted by the time Hurd broke the news on last night on TV. Yeah. If true, that's a shabby way to treat a club champion. says John of Coburg.
Yeah, I actually think the club's done a pretty good job at keeping most of it in-house all the way through, and I got pretty frayed at the edges, I think, the last week or so. Clearly, what happened with Dean Solomon on the way out, I think a fair bit of water's got to go under the bridge between now and then for him to be part of McVay's staff next year, even though he's got a contract and has said previously he'd be there. I think that's less likely than more likely as it sits at the moment, and the other candidates only got a call tonight. So it was only moments before the members were told that essentially that they had missed out on the process. So it was the good reporting of Callum Toomey last night to essentially break the news, and that's what James Hurd was responding to last night on Nine. Let's head to the phones. Ray is the next of our callers, 1300 222 774. Hello, Ray.
G'day. I'm delighted that McVay got the job and they didn't go with Hurd. I've had a theory for some time that superstar players don't make great. I suggest that if you look at Voss, did no good with Carlton. Barassi did no good with Melbourne. He was great when North Melbourne bought a team of champions, but no good with ordinary players. Ted Whitten was great at coaching Victoria, a team of superstars, but no good at coaching Footscray. So Voss, as we've all seen this year, was no good. But a gritty player that was able to get the best out of mixed talented players, and they seem to do better.
Ray, I've long held the same belief. There's always exceptions to the rules.
It's a pretty good one.
Yeah, Lee Matthews was arguably sort of the best player of all time in the eyes of some, and is a four-time premiership coach. So there are exceptions. But I think the broad theory is that coaches who weren't as good a player had to work the margins to learn ways that they could understand the game cerebrally so that they could play it at a high level. Great players sometimes can do it effortlessly.
Yeah, but I also think that great players expect everyone to be on the same thinking that they're on. That's why they're great players, because they think differently. Like the really small percentage that are the best players in the game, that they operate in a different level, and they expect other players to be at that level when the majority are not.
1300 222 774 is the talkback number. That's 1300 222 774 if you want to have your say. The final series was launched today, so week one and week two fixtures have come out. So what we've learned is that the Friday night fixture this week is going to be Collingwood and the Western Bulldogs, or the Western Bulldogs and Collingwood. How juicy this is. Not only do we have a wild card game, we have the ultimate Bont versus Nick Dacos showdown on a Friday night, which is just a real treat at the MCG for us on ABC AFL Daily. Then it is Melbourne and Carlton at the MCG, so that is the Saturday night fixture. Our Baggers Murph are at it Saturday night at the MCG in front of a packed house. So what a weekend for the city of Melbourne, with the wildcard weekend in action for the first time, and four Victorian teams going at it. A couple of juicy games.
Are we happy with the wildcard now or not?
Would have been happier if it was Carlton and Collingwood.
I think we're still getting two games really nice, at 95,000 plus, but it would have been nice, wouldn't it, to see Carlton and Collingwood go head-to-head in that first wildcard round.
The other games that we know about are week two of the final series. So Thursday night fixture is going to be Fremantle and Hawthorn. So that'll be an 8 p.m. start Eastern time, just after 8 o'clock. Friday night will be Geelong against their wildcard opponent. And then the doubleheader on Saturday in the twilight spot, the Swans up against the Lions, that qualifying final locked in. And then Adelaide will play their opponent, whoever comes out of that wildcard game, on Saturday night. The interesting thing to note here is that, unlike everything else that happens in the final series, the wildcard games are reseeded.
Yeah.
I don't understand why that is, why it isn't predetermined who you play in the next round.
That was my next question, so you've just answered it for me. Yep. But that's a very strange way to go about it.
So what I mean by that essentially is, like, if eighth beats fifth, for example, in the old elimination final, it's not as if eighth changes to the other side of the bracket and plays the highest ranked team or whatever it turns out to be. And yet we reseed in the wildcards in a way that we don't elsewhere. So
then who's Carlton playing then in the second week?
Well, it all depends on what happens in the other one. So actually, no.
No, it's not, because they're
Carlton,
the 10th.
Carlton won't matter, because they'll be the lowest ranked team. Yeah. So they will play the fifth ranked team, which is Geelong. So, they will play Geelong. Yep. I've got that right. We're all learning on the run.
It's just too confusing for me.
The other thing that happened today is obviously Andrew Dillon fronted the press at the finals launch, and understandably he was left to answer a lot of questions around the Sydney Swans situation, which is obviously ongoing. The police investigation continues here, and he was answered a number of questions. Here's a little taste of what he had to say, starting with, does the Swans episode take the gloss off the final series?
Yeah, I think it is, but
What we saw yesterday is how footy is a place where people can come together. And I think we'll see that during the final series. Really serious matter being investigated by the police, but I think the finals and footy is a way that people can come together. The invitation for the Brownlow will be going out this week. Those players won't be invited. I think the actions of a few don't take away from the thousands of people involved in football at all different levels who do great things all the time. But what we do know is that we can do things better, and we'll continue to do that, and we'll continue to learn and be better. Look, we've worked really closely with the club over the past week, met with the club board only a couple of weeks ago. It's a learning experience for the club, and I think it's something that they will continue to work through. Well, I think I've made it really clear what the AFL stands for is respect for women is not negotiable. I think it's right that people would be asking questions at the moment, and I think football is a place where everyone should feel safe and included, and we will continue to work with our playing group and all our supporters on making sure that we have an environment.
So first time we've really heard from Andrew Dillon speak. We've obviously heard from him previously through a statement that was put out late last week by the AFL, which was very strong. Early last week when this first came to light. I've heard from a couple of people today about the fact that they feel like the AFL hasn't been strong enough on this front. I guess what I would say on this is that as much as we hope that the AFL are stronger when it comes to some social issues in the game, I look at it very much like it's, and I always use the analogy about, like, when it's like when a shark takes a bite out of a seal, for example, that's not a moral decision for the shark. So all of us on the outside feel like they should keep that more front of mind. I feel like the AFL approaches it very much as that's just what we do. We operate like a business, even though we're a non-for-profit. We're going to go out there and essentially it's not a moral decision for us. We're out to make as much money as possible. So whether that's, people that are homophobic, people that are gay, people that are misogynistic, people that are strong clearly in women's rights and all the rest of it, whatever it turns out to be. They want everybody's money equally, as much as they possibly can as a way to try and run their business. That's how I view a lot of, not just the AFL, by the way, but sporting organisations in general, that I feel like they're motivated more by that. And I think for a competition that is a non-for-profit that has a guaranteed income source, they have the opportunity to lead a lot more on that front. I wasn't as critical of Andrew Dillon on this front. I felt like, yes, he had to front up today, but the statement was strong at least last week when they got the chance to speak about this for the first time. I can understand why people feel like they fall short on different issues when it comes to social issues in the game. Yeah, and that they would like them to be stronger on that, and that they have a great opportunity to. But that they're not leaders in social change, perhaps the way they have been in a bygone era. It feels like they're playing catch up to the rest of the society. They're not leading the way on a lot of these issues.
I think too, they would have been looking at the way in which Sydney handled it, and if they didn't handle it the right way, they would have come over the top. But I think that they were convinced and they were happy about the way in which Sydney addressed the whole week, I thought.
When you think about, they learn about it on Monday, they interviewed the players on Tuesday, and they handed down the findings from what they knew on Wednesday, which doesn't have any prejudice on, obviously, the ongoing police investigation, which continues, by the way, and we need to continue to call that out, and obviously our thoughts with the alleged victim as part of all this as well. Back to matters of football, Zach Butters, we'll talk more about this after the latest from the ABC newsroom, but we learnt a little from Zach today as to what comes next, and as many of us expected, the worst-kept secret in the competition, he is going to exercise his free agency option. This grab was released by the Port Adelaide website as their star midfielder is on the move.
Yeah, I've made a decision to head home. It's obviously been one that I've wrestled with for a while now, and it's been quite tough to get to the bottom of it. And it's been a tough decision in my life and one that I haven't taken lightly, but it's been tough.
Is it based on equally family and some support back in Victoria? Is that part of the reasoning?
Yeah, most definitely. I feel like, although I've loved my time in Adelaide and everything the city's given to me and the football club's given to me, I feel like I'm probably at a stage of my life where I'd like to get back around some family and friends and enjoy some more time with them and cherish their moments with them. But in saying that, I've also really enjoyed my time at the footy club and here in Adelaide. And it's felt like home for me as well.
And finally, next steps. I know you're just announcing it today, but next steps from here?
Yeah, next steps, obviously, a bit to play through in the next little bit with my manager and family and trying to decide on what's next for me. And, I'll look to get that sorted in the next little bit. And the club have been great throughout everything. So yeah, I'm sure they'll work together and we'll get something done.
The pros and cons. Let's work our way through the three contenders. So we'll start with the Tigers, Ben, who have picked two.
Well, the pros there is he's going to get a heap of cash, isn't he? And they've got a young core, and he will probably be named captain if he rolls up at Richmond, or possibly be named captain. So those are the pros there. The cons are clearly, Murph, that it's a long build. They're very young. They're right at the bottom. Does he want to go somewhere where he can contend immediately?
I don't think he's on the back end where he needs to contend immediately, but it's also about what Port Adelaide can get in return, isn't it, for them to do the deal?
Yes. Mm. So he's a free agent, so he can walk to any club of his choosing, but Port Adelaide reserve the right to match the bid. So if Port feel like they're not getting the appropriate level of compensation, they can match the bid and force a trade, and then the two teams have to do some kind of deal.
And the last time that happened was actually Jeremy Cameron moving from GWS to Geelong. And then as a result, GWS got three first-round picks for Jeremy Cameron. So it's not insignificant for Port Adelaide to reboot their list sans Zach Butters if they match the deal. The pros and cons of Geelong, Corbin?
Yeah, lots of pros. I mean, this is a team that's remained contending for two decades. I think statistically they play in a prelim, so this is the last four. Two in every 3 years for the last two decades. I mean, you are going there to have success. Patrick Dangerfield's on the way out, so you think you get a chance to inherit that. They've got a little bit of a leadership gap, I think it's fair to say. So I wouldn't rule out the fact that there's a chance for him to even captain this team in the not-too-distant future. And then you look at the cons. The cons are, I don't know how much draft capital or collateral that Geelong have to get a deal done. So if you basically show your hand and say, hey, I want to go to the Cats, they're going to end up with a bunch of picks in the teens, which even if they trade three of them to Port Adelaide, is that better than Port Adelaide letting... Would you rather three picks in the high teens, or would you rather one pick at pick five, which is what they would get if they let him walk as a free agent?
I mean, the cons are for him to go there, it's he has to wait till the death to actually get to Geelong. I mean, I don't see outside of that there are any cons whatsoever to go to Geelong. You're right, might walk in as a skipper there as well as Richmond. But you go to a club that is just always at the top of the tree.
We were walking onto the tarmac at Mackay Airport with Mr. Cricket himself, Mike Hussey, today, and all he wanted to do was rib Andrew McDonald, the Australian cricket coach, who's a part of the Geelong board, whether they were going to get Zach Butters and where they were at in the pursuit. And he was referencing apparently Travis Head last night in the change rooms post the test match. He's a big Port Adelaide man. Was getting stuck into his coach, Andrew McDonald, about them pinching Zach Butters.
And the Western Bulldogs, so obviously this is a sentimental landing spot for Zach Butters. He grew up as a Bulldogs fan. As Luke Beveridge told us, he had number six on his back and was a big Brad Johnson fan. He gets to play with Marcus Bontempelli, who was among his favourite players growing up, which is crazy to believe given that it feels like they're contemporaries. And yet, if you think about the few years that are a difference in age, Butters was there, standing room in the 2016 grand final when Bontempelli was the best player in the premiership team. So that's clearly a pro. But the cons are, I think, on the Bulldogs front, they just haven't addressed their weakness. So they still don't have any key backs. They still haven't been a top four team under Luke Beveridge's reign as a senior coach. His future's uncertain. He's got 1 year to run. And so is the ruckman. So Tim English, who's an integral piece to holding it all together, has been linked with a move elsewhere. So it feels like there's still plenty of uncertainty if he was to go to the Dogs, Murph.
There is. There's some questions around the defence docks, as you mentioned. I think that's the one area that is certainly really lacking. Tim English, where does he go if he goes anywhere? I think his style of play is better suited to the Bulldogs. I think the Bulldogs would get a greater uplift if he went there. Just by having that real hard edge to him and being very different a player than what Marcus Bontempelli is, I think they would complement each other really well.
You could have three proper All-Australian midfielders all playing together with Richards, Bont and Butters.
Yep.
Oh, I think Geelong would get the biggest uplift. Oh, I think him with Max Holmes and Bailey Smith, I think that would be something special, and he'd offer something a little bit different to those two. But I see to you on that, Murph.
Is it only those three?
Yeah, Collingwood have been ruled out late today, we believe. So it appears that he won't be going to Collingwood.
Where would you like to see him play?
I would like to see him play at the Bulldogs.
Right. If I'm him, I I can't even make the case for any other club other than Geelong. Like, as much as a neutral footy fan, I think, damn it, another really high quality free agent or out of contract player goes at Geelong. But I'm also like, if I was Zach Butters, why wouldn't you want to go to Geelong? Like, you get to play down there and play for a great coach in Chris Scott and play alongside a bunch of other great players. You're out of sight, out of mind a little bit.
Or does he back himself in to go to Richmond, get paid a fortune, go there as captain, be the reason as to why the club turns from being 17th on the ladder, getting back up the top and experiencing what the likes of Trent Cotchin and Dustin Martin and Jack Riewoldt experienced and taking that club to win a premiership.
One's at one end, one's at the other, and the other one's right in the middle. It's three very different prospects.
A few texts coming through as well. Nathan in North Melbourne says, we've known about Butters and Ben King, likely being on the move for months now. When can we be more mature and just announce these things when the decision has actually been made rather than constantly dancing around the issue like we have this year? If you're catching up, Ben King has also announced that he'll exercise his restricted free agency as well.
Jake Stringer, likewise. We learnt that earlier today. I don't know. I feel like I don't think we are mature enough. I agree with that. I'm not sure it's coming anytime soon. If anything, the Butters playbook is the way to handle it. Played amazing footy, pushed a conversation away. Everyone knew it was happening, but we didn't talk about it, even though we did talk about it. And then at the end of the season,
it's actually going to change if the club and player at that time go, you know what, let's come out and just announce this is what's occurring, because the club wants to get a better deal for whatever the player that they can get. That's the only way it's going to change. Until that point, we're still going to have players who will play in the last game, or you sit on the sidelines like Zach Butters did yesterday and then announce it the following day.
But is there a chance that, say, Geelong, the Western Bulldogs and Port Adelaide have been talking about, if Zach Butters wants to go there, what sort of deal are we looking at since mid-year or something of the like?
They'll be looking at it the whole year, I would have thought. Even from last year, they would be looking at how to try and advance their stocks in the draft and what that looks like. So, I mean, going back to why Collingwood are probably not going to be there, I reckon they're getting Ben King and they're going to get Lachie Neal.
Ooh.
Okay. He's not going to go to Hawthorn.
Well, I just think that could be the play.
Okay. Text here from Borgs in Wagunya. Is that right? Wagunya? I think that's right.
Sure.
Hey, guys, I'm mad this Monday with the D's performance this weekend, but I'm also mad that Murph has already said that the Blues will meet Geelong. It's a two-horse race. The D's will flog Carlton, I hope, says Borgs.
Well, we both hope for both our sakes that our sides win. I mean, but we said even last week, I think, that I've loved what Melbourne have been able to do this year. But to me, at this point in time, Carlton's the form team of the competition.
My two best days at the G, I reckon the Carlton-Melbourne semi-final. I've never heard the place like that, like it was that night. The place properly shook. And the other
when
one
Blake
was
Akers kicked the goal, the insane. Place rocked.
Insane. So the fact that we get that matchup again this Saturday night is a real treat.
I mean, it's not going to surprise me if either side wins on the weekend, Melbourne or Carlton. I just feel they've both been – well, Melbourne's been better for longer over the season, but that means nothing coming up until wildcard. But if you look at the past 3 months for what Carlton's been able to do
I don't like Van Rooyen hurt, and I don't like Jefferson banged up either. I think the Blues are getting them at a great time.
Yeah. Can I just run something?
Murph nods along.
Yeah, Murph nods along. Can I just raise something? I did the exercise, and I meant to do this on the Sunday night ABC AFL Daily podcast, but I forgot. Got distracted.
So we get it tonight.
What a treat. I did the exercise. If teams only played once, you know, a lot of people get bent out of shape about the fact that we have six double-up games in an AFL season to complete the year, teams that you play twice.
So take those out.
If you only included the first meeting, what would the AFL ladder look like? And what I discovered is that the top six is the same teams, so that wouldn't change. The teams that comprise the top six, Fremantle and Sydney would be in the same positions. Hawthorn would still be third. Then there would be a rejig of Geelong, Adelaide and Brisbane, with Brisbane, who have finished fourth, actually being sixth, with an 11-6 record. The top 10 would only have one different or one difference, which would be GWS replacing Carlton inside the top 10. So I think what this tells us is that we all often do get very bent out of shape about the six double-ups, who you get twice, what does that count for? But largely, it doesn't make too much of a difference. Well, it hasn't this year anyway, to the ladder at the end of the season.
1-300-222-774. What made you mad from the weekend of footy? Corbin and Ben with Mark Murphy in the house on ABC Radio across the state of Victoria. Max from Kahuna is the next of our callers. Hello, Max.
Josh Tracy country.
Good evening, Corbin. Look, what I'm ringing about, I think you get a, well, your program's a bit like the AFL. You've got a little bit incestuous. How about we give a lot more responsibility to the AFL and country football and urban football, the heart and soul of football, which we're, country football clubs are in the moment are going through one hell of a changing times, and it's rapidly going to change. We're going to lose many of them. It depends on netball being part of football clubs. And I think the AFL just forgot the very people who create football are the very people they ignore. And I think that we need to, the AFL and even commentators need to take a greater interest and understand what rural football or what country football and urban football means to the game overall and to the well-being of people. And I think the AFL's got a little bit removed from that.
Good on you, Max. How should we do that as a press?
Oh, well, I think you should concentrate a program one night and have just a bit of an understanding of what we're getting sick of is the AFL can make a lot of rules that come at huge cost to country, to clubs and how you administer those rules and everything else. Obviously, nobody in the country at the moment can understand that stand rule, and even the AFL can't understand its own stand rule. That's just a personal thing. But the ordinary footballer fellow who puts so much in it, the grassroots, and when they go to the AFL, they're the people that the AFL give least regard to.
That's very good. That's Mad call. Max. Max for his Mad Monday. Max, do you know Josh Tracy personally?
Yes, I do. I know his parents very well, yes, and his grandfather, yes, I do.
How pleased are you to see what he's been able to do at AFL level?
Well, we are. And Job Shanahan, I spent a lot of time with his grandfather, and I know his mother very well. He's another one that we obviously value very highly because his dad lives in Kiuna, where his grandfather lives in Kiuna, where I come from. Wow. And of course, we've had many great. Well, Gary Farrant was. I have coffee with Gary most days of the week. He's a North Melbourne Premiership player. Leo Braddon was a great Carlton player that could have played a lot more Carlton games way back then. And Neville Bruns is a local boy. I grew up with. I see Neville grow up. And all that sort of thing. So, yeah, so we got that connection. What I'm trying to illustrate is that the AFL's got to realise we're the grassroots, and it's very important to Victorian cultural society and part of our culture. We do not want to lose more town football clubs, which is the real pressure we're under.
Good on you, Max. Appreciate your call. We actually covered an Ovens and Murray grand final a couple of years ago in 2023, and unfortunately, it stopped as quickly as it started. I'd love to go back out, and some of the stories we were able to tell that day, like Lauren Borden was there as well, and I remember Loz did the full rounds. We ended up chatting to the person that worked on the front gate and at the canteen, and basically the lifeblood of community footy clubs to put a huge day on. The netball grand finals were being run concurrently. Of course, a lot of country footy, the football and netball clubs. So I'll ask again, Max. I'll follow that up. Hopefully we can get out to another region and do a grand final. Mark Murphy would come.
Yeah.
You spent a bit of time in Albury, so you're always up on the border. We'll pick another regional centre, and I'm sure Murph will come along.
I was out at Gisborne a couple of weeks ago for my nephew's grand final, and you're right, they had the netball final on at the same time. There's people everywhere, great atmosphere, great community.
What we did see that day as well is Conor O'Sullivan, a very young Conor O'Sullivan playing for Albury.
Yep.
We also saw Riley Bice, who was playing for Albury in that game. We were told heading in that he had AFL talent. And Jeff Garlett.
Yes, he played.
He played.
Missed a set shot late.
Another
could possibly win it.
Another one of Murph's former teammates, Mickey Gibbons, played in that game.
For the premiership-winning Yarrawonga Pigeons.
That's a good call, though. What made you mad from the weekend of footy? 1-300-222-774. Do you know what made Andrew Dillon mad today?
Ed Richards.
Yeah, this is what Ed Richards had to say about the whole wildcard concept. Concept, that's what I'm trying to get at. Gee, it's late in the day for me. This is what he had to say about the wildcards being part of the final series.
Yeah, just treating this one as, I guess, another week, round 25, if you would. But yeah, it's good. It should be fun. It should be packed house. Very exciting for footy fans all around the country. They actually don't have to miss a week of footy now. There is something to watch, so there is that. I'm just excited to be able to prospect of winning and being able to cement a spot in the finals the following week.
This is what Andrew Dillon responded with.
I haven't heard those comments, but I'm not sure the Bulldogs have played many home and away games in front of 90,000 plus, so he might have a different feeling after the game.
Bang! What a zinger. Not many in front of 90,000.
Very good from Andrew Dillon, although I'm a bit disappointed for the Bulldogs, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Surely it's a home game. They go to Marvel, don't they?
Ooh.
Get the pies on the road.
We call it Docklands here on the ABC.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah.
Apologies. I've only been here for 5 years. But, I mean, that's something that I'm mad about.
Yeah.
Talk about a home ground advantage. You've you finish on top of your opposing side. I know it's the MCG, we'd rather probably 95,000 there, as Andrew Dillon did say, but Bulldogs should be a little bit annoyed.
Do you know what I'm going to contend tonight? I reckon it's a better result for the AFL that we didn't get Carlton Collingwood. So if we got Carlton Collingwood right, we would have had...
We would have had one really big wildcard game.
And say Melbourne played the Western Bulldogs. I know the matchup would have probably ended up Adelaide versus the Bulldogs, I think, the way that it would have panned out. But you're actually going to get more people at the G by having Carlton and Collingwood playing separate wildcard games. Because, of course, you know, if you could, you would get 300,000 people for Carlton and Collingwood. Yeah. But the ground only holds a certain amount. But all the Carlton fans will get there, and all the Collingwood fans will get there, and as a result, we're going to end up with two games of 90,000 plus instead of one.
Off pure numbers, you're right. But could you imagine the build-up this week if it was Carlton v Collingwood? It would have been terrific.
In our lifetime, we haven't had it. You got to go back to the late or the mid to late 80s, the last time that we saw something like that, and it was a long time ago.
Dez is mad. He says, are you going to mention Harry Sheezel snub? Not included in the 46... man, all-Australian squad. I mean, you got to be stiff when it's 46 men.
How are there snubs?
I'm surprised anyone missed out. I mean, we've gone from... It used to be a 40-man squad a few years ago. I did the numbers earlier on. 2020, 40-man.
Why have they gone to six more?
So what's 2020, it was 40. Then it went to 44 for a few years. Now it's out to 46.
I just don't understand that.
Yeah. The only thing I would argue is, are they trying to get closer to doing like a second team? Like, you know, in the NBA, they do an all-first team and an all-second team. So last year there was 44 and they picked 22. Yeah. This year there's 23 and they've got 46.
What's the point of doing that?
I don't know. So you can basically say, hey, you're all-second team or whatever. Yeah. So you basically didn't make the main side, but you made the second team.
Well, just on the Harry Sheezel text, so we'll respond to our listeners. Like, but I think that's the challenge when you're at a side that doesn't finish in the top 10 anymore and you're a midfielder. The midfielders are the hardest positions to try and get into the actual team, let alone the squad. And when you finish down below, it's just unfortunately for those players who finish that position, their team does it. It's hard to get the nod.
I've got a mad Monday.
Yes, hit me.
I'm mad about the fact that we don't have a criteria for the All-Australian captaincy. So it's just ebbed and flowed. Last year it was Jeremy Cameron, who said when he was presented up on stage, I've never captained any team in my whole life. We had Bont the year before, which makes sense. Toby Green even the year before that, he was a club captain. Then we had Tom Hawkins.
Tomahawk.
Who I love. Like, yeah. I'm a big Tomahawk guy, but he...
You would have fallen in line behind big Tomahawk, I reckon.
I would have, but he wasn't really a captain. And then you go back to 2018, they gave it to Lance Franklin for reasons...
I'm with you.
Yeah, like, can we just work out what the criteria is? Is it the guy who... we feel like should captain the team? Is it a reward for, you know, you've been 8 times at All-Australian, 9 times at All-Australian, like Max Gawn might have been? Just let us know what it is so we know the criteria to appoint the right person.
So the 8 club captains that are in the squad this year: Dawson, Andrews, Cripps, Pierce, Sicily, Gawn, Bont and Wilkie. Do we have a captain in there?
Oh, I think either Dawson or Pierce would be the one that I would appoint. I think they've been the two best leaders. I think Dawson has a huge emotional pull with what he did, given the passing of his brother and the scenes of him crying on the ground in the games that he returned after the passing of his brother. And Alex Pierce has been immense for the Dockers.
Yeah, Dawson or Max for me.
Yeah, I would have Max in there as well. But I think if you're the captain in the squad, in the team, and you finished on top by 2 games, clear.
Yep.
I think you should be captain of the All-Australian team.
21 players have ironed for their first All-Australian jacket. There's 9 First Nations players in the squad, which is a high number, given the overall number in the game is obviously much lower in terms of First Nations participation at the top level. The Dockers had 8 players in the squad, so Amos, Tracy, Bolton, Sarong, Reed, Jackson and Clark. 6 for the Brisbane Lions, 5 for Hawthorn, and there wasn't a single player pick from the Bombers, the Tigers or the Eagles. AFLW, so just a little shout out for the games on the weekend. So full round of fixtures, 9 matches across 2 days. Highlight, Ben, have you got one for us?
Oh, I think the Sydney doubleheader and what the Sydney women winning. And I think that was pretty significant.
16,000.
Yeah,
for that game as well. Took care of the Bombers, so the Bombers now 0-2. The Swans 2-0. Win for Colin O'Riordan in charge.
Yeah. I was going to add that. I think Colin O'Riordan is an Irishman coaching the Sydney Swans women's team is not insignificant.
It's cool enough.
Yeah, it's very cool. Like he came over as an Irishman and now he's coaching an AFLW team and is a very highly touted coach.
A lot of people whinge about North Melbourne and the streak and you know, what do we do about that and everything else. I actually think the streak is good for footy, and it's interesting when you look at things like, you know, TV ratings, for example. A lot of people think, you know, dynasties are boring. TV rights often go up in major sports. TV ratings go up when there are dynasties because the storyline of the season's easy to understand. It's, you know, who's going to slay the dragon? We've got this unbelievable team, and the story of the season is who can take down the dominant side. So North keep winning 29 straight now, haven't lost in over 2 years. And then just one little mention for Geelong too. So they got smacked first week by North Melbourne, lost by 73. They came out and won by 85 points the next week. So wrong side of a huge loss, and then big winners the next week, and they get their percentage in the positive after the first fortnight. So two rounds down in the W.
Pete in Ballarat was not happy with Andrew Dillon's response. He says Dillon's response was frankly childish. He took a week before he even fronted the media over the Swans thing. He's completely stuffed up the draw, and the way HQ are running the W, it could be done better by two teenagers working 2 days a week.
Cool.
And the rest I probably can't really read from Pete, but he's not happy.
Last one on the way out. Did Nick Watson take Mark of the Year in the last game of the regular season?
I've got Paul Curtis and Harvey Langford maybe ahead of it. Oh, I don't know.
Just conditions surely come into it, doesn't it?
Yeah, probably.
I've got Watson.
I'm with you. I know sometimes you fall for the latest, the greatest in these things, but that was like Gary Moorcroft-esque.
Wasn't it?
It was Moorcroft-esque.
Just wet.
Loved it. Loved it. That was AFL Monday. Of course, you can catch it from 6:30 Eastern every Monday night through 774 ABC Melbourne or right here on ABC AFL Daily. I'll be back tomorrow joined by Bob Murphy as we pull apart all the key talking points out of the TV shows on a Monday night that dominate the football landscape. Hope you can join us then right here through ABC AFL Daily.